Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I am Chantel C. You can call me CC. And I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. Ease on down the road.
Don't carry nothing at my velos. For 200, Alex. Thank you.
It's the morning after The Wiz live on NBC, and it's times like these where it's absolutely hard to be an expat. But that's okay, because Twitter came through. I follow most of the cast on Instagram. All of my family was posting about it on Facebook. But it's hard. It's hard not being able to watch it live. I know I'll get to see it, but Black excellence was shining last night.
Yeah, Queen Latifah as The Wiz. That's amazing.
That's amazing.
Oh, man. I'm sad that I didn't get to see it, because I really wanted to see the very first historical evidence of reverse racism ever.
Because it's an all-Black cast now.
The all-Black cast.
The outrage.
Causes so much oppression to white folks. Mind you, all of these all-white casts have been absolutely wonderful and inclusive. And not racist at all. Right. But somehow...
And, you know, ratings for The Sound of Music and Peter Pan were just so through the roof. Absolutely not. The Sound of Music did okay. Peter Pan had even less ratings. We'll see. I haven't seen official numbers yet for The Wiz, but I can guarantee with over 1 million tweets using the hashtag The Wiz, I'm pretty sure that they broke some records last night. I already saw LA Times, New York Times tweeting this was going to be a hard one to beat, but I'm just excited. We saw the Kwan, the Nene, the Whip, and Tin Man Neo went in and did the dab.
Wow. That's a lot of Blackness in The Wiz.
A lot of Blackness.
Well, to honor The Wiz, I'm going to be watching the, I'm flying to Germany today, and I'll be watching the original Wiz with my child on the airplane. So that's exciting.
That's exciting. I'm so thrilled. I think it's what, the 40-year anniversary now from the Broadway production, which is going back on Broadway next year. They have definitely, you know, paved the way, gave the next generation something, a classic like the one I grew up with. Of course, there's nothing like Diana Ross and Michael Jackson, but last night, I believe they threw down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Michael Jackson was a shit when my son is still like, well, Michael Jackson is the best ever. And Michael Jackson has been dead for most of his life, right? Like, so he's still like, nah, nobody beats Michael Jackson. So, yeah.
You know, Black people, we stick to our icons, which is also quite controversial. This week, I believe Sunday, were the Soul Train Awards hosted by Erykah Badu.
Oh, Lord, no.
Props to, you know, her shade on Iggy. But what was going on with R. Kelly? What happened there?
Well, you know, I feel like we all have our inner hotep, and it's really hard to exercise the inner hotep. Like, there's some part in each one of us that's like, nah, fuck all that. Nation building time. We can't spare not one Black man or woman. I don't care what they do. Bill Cosby still contributed a lot. R. Kelly still contributed a lot. And James Brown still contributed a lot. And we're not going to talk about anything else. Like, we can't even really deal with the complexity, because there's such a smear campaign in mainstream media since the beginning of America to kind of give this idea of Black criminality. And so a lot of times, we go all the way overboard and ignore Black criminality within our midst, even if it's, especially if it's at the sacrifice of our children and Black girls and women. Like, they can take a little bit of rape if it means that this Black man is going to shine, right?
Exactly.
So R. Kelly, the Pied Piper of child rape, got on stage, and nobody sat down, as far as I understand. Nobody was a conscientious objector in bumping and grinding to whatever R. Kelly was putting down.
Look, I understand he's a talented man. And bump and grind, I mean, you know, that's like a classic of 90s slow jams for the Netflix and chill nights, right? But it reminded me of that episode Straight Out of the Boondocks. Mm-hmm. It reminded me exactly of that. Willingly blind or forgetting or whatever to all of the trauma that he's caused so many people, including people that we love and know, or like to assume that we know, like Aaliyah. So I was a bit disappointed, but there seems to be a hotep that the Black community is ready to relieve themselves of.
Uh-oh. Not Spike.
Spike.
Well, not everybody. I mean, so many people were like, I can't wait to spend my black dollars on Chirac. Spike is a genius, brilliance of adapting this Greek whatever. First of all, he's adapting a Greek play. And if we take it all the way back, it comes to this idea that these ancient Greek Roman classic texts are somehow timeless. And somehow we can apply them to our own situations when we know from Hotep School number one that part of why we become Hoteps in the first place is because we are not represented in that. So now let's take another European classic and superimpose it on this landscape of all black, highly urban Chicago, wherein we can pretend that they're ancient Greece and not dealing with this external forces and not dealing with a situation that has basically been socially engineered so that any human being, black, white, whatever, would fail within that situation and turn to violence or whatever. We're just going to pretend that somehow, you know, the situations in present day Chicago mirror the situations in ancient day Greece. So it's really bad. Somebody shut him down and was thrown out of the premiere.
Yes, you can find that. I think we've tweeted that SoundCloud clip of it. It was a retweet from Son of Baldwin. And he called him out, you know, and a lot of people in the audience, while he was being taken out, said, no, don't take him out. Don't shut him down. Let mm-hmm. him speak. That's not love, Spike. Do you know Chicagoans? Are you offering them employment? What do you think happens when you put people in the projects and don't offer them any jobs? You know, people were going in with very real arguments, and Spike had nothing to say.
He doesn't have anything to say. The guy that shut him down was a dream defender named Umi Salah. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And he had all valid, very relevant points that mirrors what you just said. But, you know, Spike has nothing to say with that. I mean, like, I think that coming from a filmmaker who has often overemphasized the power of Black female sexuality and our agency in the exploitation of that sexuality, and has not shied away from exploiting Black female sexuality in his
Right. And it makes me think, since he is called a genius often, it makes me wonder if maybe we should go back, rewatch those films like Very Smart Brothers did with listening to The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Maybe we need to revisit it and see if we still find it to be so radical, so revolutionary, so genius.
Look, this was brought up a long time ago, back when in his freshman project or whatever it was. And She's Gotta Have It. He put in a rape scene where a consensual sex act became non-consensual, very clearly non-consensual, and then framed it in his filmmaking as the fault of the over-sexualized Black woman for welcoming all these partners and welcoming so much sex into her life. He did that way back, and he has never either articulated any departure in his movies or in his talks from that line of thinking, that if we as Black women are full agents in our sexuality in ways of expressing it in ways that are traditionally only allowed for men to do, that somehow if we are exploited in that, or whatever, come what may, we get what we get. So let it be violence in our communities, let it be abuse, let it be rape, we get what we get, right?
Well,
so,
what do you get, Spike?
Spike gets an Oscar. That's what Spike gets.
Spike?
Finally.
No.
Finally. And he gets on stage and talks about how Oprah don't matter. Like, let's bring it all the way around. He was like, y'all need diversity, blah, 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 blah. Oprah don't matter. Mind you, this cat did not mention Shonda. He did not mention Ava DuVernay. He did not mention
Lupita. Did he mention her?
He did mention Lupita. He's not mentioning the director of Pariah, whose name is eluding me. So these Black woman directors that have been coming out, getting acclaim, getting these gigs, he's not even, who's standing behind him? A rack of Black men, right? Like, so, I mean, this is Denzel. When is Samuel over there? You know, I'm like, he got a posse.
Right.
Right? I can't with Spike right now.
No.
Spike, like Al Sharpton, like Jesse Jackson, like Bill Cosby, belonged to a generation that had a very single issue politic. His single issue politic is Black empowerment. Of course, it's not highly intersectional in looking at issues at misogyny. It's not highly intersectional in looking at issues of ableism or issues of just anything other than this very simplistic Hotep. Right. This Black empowerment has to do with the exaltation of individual Black. Within that whole kind of ideology, if Spike is doing well, we're all doing well.
Which is clearly not the case.
No.
Well, in other news, there was a bit of a fiasco, a mini scandal with Chris Brown this week. He's not had a good week. One hand, he was supposed to appear on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah and did not. He was replaced by Nick Cannon. Even though The Daily Show's official statement says that rescheduling happens all the time and they do plan on having him at some point. And Australia didn't issue him a visa, so he had to cancel his tour in New Zealand and Australia. They said that they're not giving him a visa due to his violent past. Now, you can't really call it a pass because he's still popping off, but...
Is he?
He's always popping off. We all know this, but...
He's still hanging with the same crew of knuckleheads.
Well, actually, wasn't his place robbed? So I think he figured out that those knuckleheads were probably the people who robbed him. So he might have a new group of knuckleheads, but the only thing that I kind of wish could have happened on The Daily Show is the confrontation. A lot of people are saying that it was due to Daily Show staffers leaking the information that they were dissatisfied with the pick. But I have to wonder if that's the complete truth, because Trevor Noah had planned on, you know, talking about domestic violence because he grew up watching his mother be abused. So I have to wonder if there's maybe a little more to the story and Chris wasn't ready for that interview.
No, I definitely wouldn't be surprised if Chris pulled out, because in the wake of the Rihanna incident, he acted like after 5 days, nobody should be talking to him about any domestic violence, everything, like he had paid his dues. So remember he went
yes.
And he busted the place up because they had a question for him.
Yes.
So I doubt very seriously that he was interested in somebody cracking on him and talking about their mom being beat, because, you know, that's Chris's past too, which he hasn't clearly resolved. And neither has his mama, to be very real, because, you know, Chris pay her bills. So the whole power dynamic in that mommy time relationship is huge, and there's no investment in pushing Chris to do better. Because if you have a conflict with him, that might mean you don't get your stipend next month, right? Like, right. So that's what's going on there. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Chris pulled out. But, you know, I mean, like, I don't really need to see Chris anywhere. I'm like, all Chris could do for me is sing and dance. I mean, like, the cool thing about Rihanna is that when she talks, I'm like, wow, I could watch you talk all day. But Chris didn't have that. Even when he was on the Larry King show with his mom, I mean, I felt just like, wow, we need to go back and look at your education records, because clearly this does not start, right? Like,
right.
This started in, like, the second grade when the reconciliation came home. I mean, just what on earth, Chris, right? Like, I don't need to make fun of that, but it's just like, gosh. You know, this is not the brightest bulb in the box. And then he has these issues on top of it. And then he has a cooler yes man. And then he's a big bully. So nobody really feels like they can stand up to that. It's just like, it's really sad, because I see other people that he might have been able to listen to. He might have been able to respect. But, you know, let him go and be with royalty. Let him focus.
Right. He's a father now, a father of a daughter. Mm. So maybe he has... Maybe there's potential now for transformation. You know, we might need to be careful, because otherwise he's going to be popping off on us pretty soon. So, moving on.
Let Chris come. No, I'm joking. I want them blows, Chris.
Our second segment is a bit different today. In our second segment, I had the chance to sit down with Jade Foster, the executive producer of a film. Have a listen. So this is Chantel C sitting next to Jade Foster. Thank you so much, Jade, for agreeing to interview with me on such short notice.
Chantel C, street names out here. That's cool. I'll take that. Hi.
Hi. As many of our listeners might have heard 2 episodes ago, I was excited. I said I was excited because I was taking my meetup group, my Black Queer Women in London meetup group, to go see your film, Women in the Word, the revival movie.
Yay!
And I got to see it on Sunday at the Fringe Fest, and it was dope. It was dope. I really enjoyed it, and I'm so glad that you came, you know, that they were able to fly you over last minute to do some Q&A with us. So just for everyone who hasn't had the wonderful opportunity to see the film yet, could you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, yeah. The revival movie is directed by Sakeem Kia Dorsett, who's based in Brooklyn. It is a feature documentary that follows five Black women on a road trip of a lifetime during the international poetry tour. So it's myself and four other women. We hop in a van and we do living room concerts in Chicago, Brooklyn, D.C. Where else did we go? Toronto.
Atlanta,
and Durham. And in Detroit and Oberlin. It was a good trip. It was a good trip. So it just, in the movie, we talk about gender identity. We talk about sexuality. We talk about our relationships with other women. We read poems. We do music. Beat studies in the film. A lot of Black feminists and activists are speaking in the film. Nikki Finney makes an appearance, as well as Alexis DeVoe. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I'm really proud of it.
You should be. I came out of that film being, as I told you more than once, thoroughly inspired. And I was just wondering, where did the idea come from?
Goddess. So the movie is about a poetry tour I used to do in the States. I love saying the States when I'm in London, because that's what they say. So the tour, the revival, came from me just creating space as a poet, because I wasn't really slammish and I wasn't really a book poet either, academic poet. And just wanting to have a space to call my own, to love myself and love other people. And the movie, Sakia Dorsett, came up to me like the second year, maybe our third year touring, and asked if she could make a film.
Amazing. Yeah. The people that we see in the film, I think it's Ty Freedom Ford, Soul Sis,
yes,
Eli Turner.
Yep, Eli Turner, myself, and B-Stead.
How did you put that group together?
Ooh. Well, the first question I ask for anyone who comes on tour is, what's your sign? You can it's very important. You can only have but so many Leos in one car, okay? But not Leos are actually awesome. But you know, you want to make sure you have a fire sign, a water sign, an earth sign. You can't have like six fire signs or it might be a fight, you know. So that's a big important question. And everybody else, I mean, I just really respect and honor Ty's work. I really like B's work. I really vibe well and respect Soul Sis's work and what she does in D.C. as a creative and like person who gets people together. So yeah, I just have to respect your work and think you have to be a nice person. That's how I pick them.
And because you mentioned, I don't know if someone asked the question or if you brought it up on your own, but you mentioned how harmonious the whole mm-hmm. tour was. You know, it's beautiful to see Black women, some Black queer women even, coming together touring in this tiny ass minivan, right? No arguments. Everyone's getting
no caught. Arguments, no nothing. It's like the anti Atlanta Housewives.
Look, I told you to stay off of my NeNe now.
You know, I love Kenya Moore. Kenya Moore is my role model, but I'm just saying.
Oh, wait. Now we might not be able to tour together.
Yeah, no, we had absolutely no drama. Like, and that kind of frustrated the director a bit, because she's like, where are we going to find the story if there's like no conflict between the women? And she ended up, you know, you saw the movie, so she found something, and it's not, we were all going through similar experiences.
Right.
But anytime we had trouble, it was like just normal things, like being exhausted, being hungry, having to stop the car 10 times, because no one ever has to go to the bathroom at the same time. You know, you stop once, an hour later, someone else has to go. 20 minutes later, someone else has to go. But it was really cool. We all ended up, our cycles ended up thinking up by the end of the trip. Everybody was on their period. It's just like, oh, love.
Oh, y'all are a mess.
Yeah. But you know, the other drama, you know, once in Atlanta, our host, her and her partner owned the place together, but her partner didn't want us to do it, but they had broke up. So the partner had the cops come and tried to shut it down.
Wow.
Mary just handled it. You put on your white people voice. And you're like, listen, sir, we're just having friends over it, you know? But that woman had called me, her ex-partner had called me weeks before and was like, you can't have that in my house. You can't do that. I'm a business owner. Just drama. So it was always, it would be stuff with the venue or the sound system or Toronto where we had the show. They were having an after party afterwards. So we didn't get to sleep at all till like 4 a.m. and we had to get on the road at 6. So it was like issues with the tour that become a better producer, not with each other.
That's great. Are you guys still in touch?
Cool.
The cast?
Oh, yeah. Now with the film, we get to work together even more now that it's finished, because we're booking screenings and things like that. So I just booked a screening at College Park where they asked for two cast members to come. So
nice.
Me and B will do that. Then in terms of like, you know, like the, on the road, Sakia went on tour in 2011 and 2012. But then after that, for 2013, she would have to call us together to do interviews, just just to kind of put the story together, you know, like, so the interviews you see in the movie is recent, like that was all last year.
Yeah, I noticed that B's hair had taken quite a transition the film to the interviews. When you're, I don't know how it works completely, but when you're submitting or when you're pitching the film to different venues, what is the positioning of it?
I really just go directly with films to a school's queer group, their Black women group, or their poetry group. It hits all those three pockets and those three themes. And then and I just say, oh, if you're looking for programming, it's like schools, it's departments at schools that are directly, their job is to present creative work that students can identify with or be inspired by. So that's how I do it.
Okay.
And I really just go by who I know that knows somebody, just like with the revival.
Is there a type of a message that you feel you were hoping to deliver with this film, or now, maybe not even beforehand, but now in hindsight, when you watch it, do you feel like there's a message coming across?
I think that's a question for Sakia and not for me.
Okay.
You know, like, I'm not responsible for the creative message or output or how the film came together.
Okay, but maybe the tour.
The tour, yeah. No, I just want the tour to sell out every time. I was telling somebody yesterday or the day before, I don't know, everything is fading into each other this past week. But I don't do anything because I want to. I move by purpose and because I was told to. So I don't really have an objective or an expectation of anything. I'm like, 5,000 five people show up, let's go. 5,000 people show up, let's go. And my only goal is to do it and to get it done.
And what are you up to these days? I believe you mentioned that the tour has ceased to exist.
But
you're moving on to new projects.
Yeah. So our last tour, our farewell tour, was last year, 2014, and we went on the road with Natasha T. Miller, who's a big slam poet and working poet, been covered everywhere, and Queen Sheba, who's also a beast based in Atlanta. And Beast Daddy went too, but it was just two different poets this time. And we had a great time, sold out every show again, so I just felt like we were growing bigger. As we grew bigger, I wanted to keep the integrity of the revival tour and what it really meant. So I ended up retiring it. And now I am focused 100% on the movie and later opening a space. I think I've spent a lot of time touring and creating pockets of spaces that, you know, just pop up and then they're gone for Black queer women. So now I want a permanent space for everybody. And of course, it's informed by me being Black, by me being queer, by me being woman, if you want to call me all of those things. But it's really a space for books and events and coffee and people and love. It's called Chloe.
It's called Chloe. What
it's
does
called
Chloe
Chloe.
Mean?
Chloe is Toni Morrison's birth name, given name. So it's really a love letter to her as the greatest American writer ever.
Mm.
There'll be books. There'll be lots and lots of books. Please donate.
Well, how can people follow the project? Where do you plan on setting up shop?
I don't know. Setting up shop. The space is going to be in Washington, D.C., actually in Southeast. That's where I was born and raised. And I guess to follow the project, follow me on Facebook.
Okay.
Jade Foster is my name.
Jade Foster.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's two Jade Fosters on Facebook. I'm the prettier one.
With the dope picture.
Hey, let's go for it. I'll take that. Thank you.
I read the update on it. What did you say?
That time I went to New Orleans because I wanted to.
Yes.
I did.
That time I went to New Orleans because I wanted to. I love it. And how can we follow the movie?
The movie is on Instagram at The Revival Movie. The movie is on Twitter at The Revival Movie. The movie is on Facebook at The Revival Movie. And if you want to bring it to your school or to your job or to your organization, you can email me at info@therevivalmovie.com. Oh, that's our website, therevivalmovie.com.
And we'll be sure to link to all of that.
Thank you.
We definitely will. Thank you for being here. Is there anything that you want to leave us with? Since it just feels like the universe was working, because Denise and I have just started this podcast, The Queer Truth, that is for Black queer women.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this revival tour and now the film.
That is for Black, Black queer women.
Right. So is there, what can we do going forward that we keep creating these spaces and these opportunities for other people like us?
Let me think.
Okay.
What can we do to create space, or is there anything I want to leave folks with? Identity is a big thing, right? And as Black queer women, something me and Sakia would struggle with is that there was another documentary that talked about being Black, being queer, being woman puts you at like a triple disadvantage, right? And I would get so frustrated with that because I'm never willing to say I'm at any type of disadvantage. And so I think it's redefining what that means and recognizing that being so-called Black, being so-called queer, being so-called woman puts us at in a space that's so unfuckwittable that the things we have to deal with when we have to talk to, you know, basic humans, you know, just to have some sensitivity around it and just recognize the divinity and all of those things. My mother's a Black woman and I love sleeping with women. But before I call myself any of those things, I would call myself a god, and I encourage everyone to do the same.
Well, on those powerful words, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Y'all don't see me, I'm blushing. I'm like, powerful words.
Powerful, I feel empowered. Thank you.
In our third and last segment, we normally like to talk about things that are making us happy, things we're looking forward to, we're excited about. Miss Always Unprepared, what you got for us today?
Wow. How you gonna do a Black woman like that? what do I have? Why are you starting with me? You know I be unprepared.
That's why I'm starting with you. You gotta bring it. What's up? What's happening?
My goodness. So you're asking me what's happening in Vienna?
No, I'm asking you, you know, anything. What are you happy about? Excited about? What are you looking forward to? If there's something local, that's always nice.
Great. I'm going on a plane. I'm flying to Germany. I'm going to Frankfurt and Karlsruhe. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to hit up those Weihnachtsmarkt. So those are the Christmas markets in Germany. And I'm going to get, you know, very essential things like Glühwein, which is like hot alcohol.
It's mulled wine.
With juice. It's hot alcohol with juice. I really do appreciate it. See, what else will I be doing? Going to Christmas parties. And then, you know, when I come back to Vienna, well, what I'm missing in Vienna is all of this feminist porn stuff. I'm missing the Human Rights Film Festival.
All right.
And as part of the Human Rights Film Festival, there's a feminist porn showing film. So I think it's a series of short films. And that will be happening while I'm gone, so I won't be there to look at that. But, you know, I wasn't really clear how I was going to be looking at porn in a theater full of people anyway.
What?
So
you never went to the International Porn Film Festival in Berlin?
Never, ever, never, ever? No, never.
Oh,
no.
Wow. You know, a lot of the people we know star in those films.
Oh, no. No, I missed. See, what would happen with me is I would go to the Berlinale and I'd be going to a film that was described as "For the Joys of Life." And I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. And then, like, at minute 15, it's like, X, right? Berlinale! You know, that's kind of always the danger of going to artistic films, so to speak, is that, you know, they don't have any boundaries when it comes to depicting any kind of sexuality. But I never went to, like, an explicit porn festival or anything like that. So more power to everybody. I'll be thinking of you while drinking my Glühwein in Germany. So that's what's happening with me. And what's going on in London, that boring small town that you live in?
You know, I'm absolutely out of the loop. What's going on in London? Actually, I'm getting into the Christmas spirit this weekend. That's what I'm doing. I'm putting up my tree. I'm going to a Christmas crafternoon to make some nice little ornaments, some name tags. I'm doing the domesticated life this weekend.
Oh, you're Black Martha Stewart, ain't you?
Sometimes I am. I'm starting to bake my Christmas cookies. See, you reminded me. Yeah, I'm doing all of that.
Wow.
So that's me. And maybe I can find a way to watch The Wiz.
Look at you. Oh my God. Breaking the law.
Well, my family recorded it, but it's going to take too long for me to wait on that, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to wait on it because if I think about it, I'll just get sad. So I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to wait on it. Oh, by the way, Francesca contacted us and let us know that her name be Francesca.
She sure did. Her name is Francesca, and she likes to go by Francesca, but people do call her Cheska Lee because Lee is her middle name. So no one was wrong here. It was a win-win.
Pretty sure you were wrong.
Pretty sure I was.
Some people get to write articles in The Guardian. Those people aren't me. I'm just putting that out there. One me that wrote an article in The Guardian, but some people did, about how the myth of the angry Black woman needs to die, especially in the workplace. And I'm not sure if I want that myth to die, because I use that myth to manage very effectively. I mean, I'm happy with it, actually. So, but you think it needs to die?
I didn't say that it needs to die. That's not what I wrote. I was just pointing out the importance of differentiating. So there's a lot of literature out there, as we all know, concerning leadership. And as always, it's either concerning race, and you typically are talking about white men versus black men, or it's concerning gender, and you're talking about white and black men versus white women. One of the very few intersectional studies that shows you have to take both gender and race into consideration, because both black women and white men are allowed to be assertive in their leadership styles. Really, I wasn't saying, you know, let's get rid of it. I was just offering maybe some insights into why that is. In my opinion, comes from the many tropes of the black woman, and she has many, where she's allowed to be angry. She's portrayed as angry. She's also portrayed as agentic, having agency over her actions.
That doesn't surprise me at all. And I'll give you a small anecdote. Years and years ago, I did a bit of talking with an amazing Native American poet and activist queer woman named Christos. One of the things that she talked about was co-facilitating a feminist, anti-racist sort of workshop where there were white women there, and she was co-facilitating with a black woman. And of course, they had established ground rules, boundaries at the beginning of this workshop. But when she, as a Native American woman, would enforce the boundaries or ground rules, white tears would come. The black woman could be like, shut the F up. And then it would be like, oh, Susan's so crazy. You know?
Wow.
So, right. And so her and the black woman that co-facilitated with her peep what was going on and worked within those boundaries, so to speak, or worked within that dynamic to try and get what they needed to get done. But one of the things that she was saying, that they were completely at ease with this black woman being assertive and controlling the space. They were completely not okay with a Native American woman, because, you know, the stereotype of the Native American woman is docile, right, and stuff like that. They weren't at all okay with that. And this goes to the Margaret Cho, recently, last week. I know you're excited to hear all about that, girl. You're excited to hear all about that. Not. I want to see Margaret Cho, and she's Korean, and she talks about that. And she, you know, she makes a joke about it. She's like, well, there is one thing that we could do, is we could get Jewish men to do whatever we want.
Wow.
She said, if Moses was an Asian woman, he would have had them out of Egypt in no time. Love her, because in the first 5 minutes, I was like, is this a contest on how many buzz topics she could fit into 5 minutes? She hit on Swastika Pete. She talked about Krampus. She talked about Black Lives Matter. She talked about, I mean, she went in.
Wow.
First 5 minutes of being on stage. I was like, Margaret, not a joke. White women were really, you know, they
uncomfortable. Were they uncomfortable?
They were laughing and laughing, but she definitely took it right up to that fence and was like, what you gonna do? And even said in her thing, he's like, you know, I love it when white people try and tell me what's racist. She's doing the most.
Well, she's controversial, but I can't appreciate a lot of things about her. Would you say that the audience was fairly diverse, or was it mostly
Would
Austrian?
Would you say that I'm in Vienna, or would you say that I'm not in Vienna?
Okay.
You would say that I'm in Vienna.
Okay.
I
think we got our answer.
Yeah, there you go. But I will say that it was a very queer audience. It was highly queer. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of dykishness and lots of gayness in the audience. So that was great.
That's always to be appreciated. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. In our bio, you can also find the link to subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Otherwise, you can go straight to our website, thequeertruth.com. Can I say it?
What's my name?
We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Until next time, peace out.
Okay, bye.